Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Heart of the Matter. Since it worked out well this week, I decided to tape a program, and that's now the schedule we're on. We're on the If It Works Out Well, We'll Tape a Program schedule. And I wanted to just start by commenting on the controversy raging over the flying of the Confederate flag. That is, there are some state governments, I don't know how many are left, but that are flying it. I believe, first of all, individuals ought to be able to fly that flag or have it on their car window or display it in some other way. I don't think it's consistent with liberty of conscience and liberty of speech to ban any flag or symbol an individual desires to display, so long as the thing in question is not obviously obscene. As for a state flying or not flying such a flag, I would say so long as it's flown in a way which is subservient, you might say, to the U.S. flag and the particular state flag, I would say the people of the state will have to decide that one. But I have to also add that there's no getting around the fact that the Confederate flag stands for slavery and the deaths and the maiming of hundreds of thousands of Americans because the slave power of the South was determined to keep and extend slavery, while at the same time they saw that the balance of political power in the federal government under the Constitution was against them. And so the flag itself, I know for some people, it doesn't stand for that. And I understand that. And I know Southerners who perhaps have bought into a rewritten account of history to say, well, it doesn't stand at all for that. It stands for some wonderful principles and some great bravery. There's no doubt that it stands for some great bravery, but it also stands for slavery. Now, when Abraham Lincoln was elected, the slave power in the South knew that while he would not abolish slavery in the whole country, except by a constitutional amendment, which he hoped to see passed eventually, and of course that was not something he could just pass, yet Lincoln was one of many determined to limit the spread of slavery and to see it abolished entirely as soon as possible. And that's a fact. No matter what statements of Lincoln's you take out of context, that is a fact and it can be proven. Now, during the Civil War, Lincoln seized the opportunity to abolish slavery in those states which had rebelled. As they became occupied then by federal forces, he, of course, issued the Emancipation Proclamation, finally, which freed the slaves in those areas. Why? How could he do that under the Constitution? Well, his reasoning was that since such states had rebelled and had removed themselves from constitutional footing, and so by doing this, he could declare the slaves contraband of war in an occupied territory, Lincoln felt he could free them constitutionally. Well, in the Union states, that could only be done by constitutional amendment. And, of course, things were moving in that direction. Now, a great many people misunderstand the cause of the Civil War, that it was, yes, a war fought over slavery, both the so-called right to own slaves and the slave power's determination to expand slavery into new territories and states. I say the slave powers. That is the owners of slaves, that is those who saw great economic gain by having slaves and being a part of that whole system in some way. I say politicians, many of them slave owners, probably almost all of them in the South slave owners. It's the slave power. There were many, many people in the South, first of all, that were against slavery, although they were silenced in time, but there were many against it. But there were many who were ambivalent toward it. But there was a slave power. And now, of course, a great many people have been schooled in a rewritten history of the causes of this great conflict, our Civil War, America's Civil War, and they sincerely believe the struggle was the equivalent of a repeat of our War of Independence from Great Britain. Nothing could be further from the truth. And you can read our Declaration of Independence. No, it was not just about taxes. As important as taxation without representation, that's an important issue, and that was one issue. But there were other things as well. Very, very grievous violations of the God-given rights of the colonists. This was not a repeat of the War of Independence. Now, any student of American history, and I mean the true history of America, knows that slavery was the cause of the controversy and conflict which led to the Civil War. And it was the cause of an ongoing controversy and conflict right from the start of our nation. Now, Jefferson meant all men when he wrote that all men are created equal in the Declaration. He is the main author of the Declaration of Independence. It's not that others didn't contribute. They meant all men are created equal. Yes, some of them had slaves. They knew not how to deal with this evil. They called it an evil. They admitted it. Many of them got rid of their slaves in time. They educated them and got rid of them. But the point is, they meant all men are created equal in the Declaration. And already, people in the South, South Carolina, and other places, they didn't like that. At the Constitutional Convention, there were those who wanted to abolish slavery. Right then, in the new nation, the nation began with the Declaration of Independence, but now, of course, there was a Constitutional Convention after the war was won, and there were those who wanted to abolish slavery, but certain representatives from the South refused to hear of such a thing. And so in that crucial time when a Constitution was much needed, a bringing together of the states that way and under a Constitution, a federal Constitution, a compromise was reached. And the slave trade was to be abolished in 20 years. And this was with the hope of the one side that slavery was on the course to extinction, especially if it was restricted wherever constitutionally then possible. And one can go through all the great political crises between the sections, and the vast, vast majority of such crises was always slavery. Slavery, slavery, slavery. And then finally, in the face of Southern threats of secession, Abraham Lincoln took all possible measures once he was elected to avoid open conflict, even withdrawing federal troops from almost all the federal forts and installations in the South, because he felt, okay, that's inflaming them. I know that Fort Sumter, he kept them there in that island. He said, well, we do have some obligation to at least have some troops here, our constitutional obligation to defend the borders of our nation. And then Fort Moultrie, if I'm not mistaken, I could be, but Fort Moultrie in Florida, similar situation. Now, again, I may be rambling here, and you better get ready for me to ramble on for a while, because I just grabbed some documents from my files and some other things. I want to talk about this issue a little bit, because there are Christian pastors who are lauding the Confederacy and teaching a rewritten history. And I think it is a blot on Christianity, quite frankly. I'm not going to question their motives, but they've either been wrongly educated or they're willingly blind on this. Now, not everyone in the South was pro-slavery. We're going back now to prior to the Civil War. But those that were had been silenced, including by violence in many cases. And the political slave power of the South had labored hard to silence all the voices against slavery, whether in the South or as much as they could in the North. You've maybe heard of that gag order that they were able to get through in the Senate, which then forbade the reading of petitions from citizens seeking an end of slavery. It used to be at that time that citizens would give their senators petitions regarding different things they wanted the Senate to act on, and the senators would read them. Well, there was a time, quite a few years before the Civil War even, where Southern politicians were able to gag that reading of those petitions if it had to do with slavery. The same political power in the South those that were in power and the government and so forth intercepted the U.S. mail even as it came from the north, searched it, and removed all abolitionist literature. Yes, the very political movement lauded now as standing for constitutional rights and liberties was in truth doing anything but. And we could go on and give you other such examples of how anti-constitutional liberties, the political slave power was. But suffice it to say, it was not the federal government, or if you like, the unionists, who fired the first shots of the war, but those who became the Confederacy. It was the slave power that started the war. It was over slavery, and even to the firing of the first shots. It wasn't the federal government who started that bloody war. It was the, to sum it up, Confederacy. And this was in defense of slavery and the economic gains from the enslavement of men, women, and children. And despite all attempts to rehabilitate Southern slavery, it was, by and large, taken as a whole, a brutal, iniquitous system. Men, women, and children owned like animals, sold, often separated from each other without mercy, even husbands and wives and parents and children. Now, if you like to point to some case where there was an owner who was kinder and et cetera, go ahead. But for every one, we can point to a number that were not. And without going further, as if, just to back up a minute, as if because one owner was nicer, so to speak, to his slaves, that justifies slavery. But without going further on this and the abuses even of these poor people, I want to just, I have here, as I said, I'm going to be sorting around. I have a quote from Mary Chestnut, the wife of Confederate official James Chestnut, who in fact helped draft the Confederate Constitution, signed it. He also was an aide to General Beauregard of the Confederacy, and it was James Chestnut who ordered the firing on Fort Sumter, of course, on orders given him. He was an aide to Jefferson Davis, and he was eventually a brigadier general in the Confederate Army. Now, Mary Chestnut was his wife, and she wrote, she confided things in her diary. And I want to just read you something she confided. Now, this is not me speaking. This is Mary Chestnut. She writes this: God forgive us, but ours is a monstrous system and wrong and iniquity. She goes on. The mulattoes one sees in every family exactly resemble the white children, and every lady tells you who is the father of all the mulatto children in everybody's household, but those in her own, she seems to think, dropped from the clouds or pretends so to think. Well, enough said. Now, I have, including for decades now, debated this issue many times with neo-Confederates, and I, in the past, gave talks on it as well. And we don't have time to go further than to zero in on one thing, the crucial thing. And we're only going to do it for just a very short time. The cause of the Civil War, which was slavery. Many of the brave and honorable men of the South who fought for the Confederacy did not fully realize that they were fighting for the slave power, which so adroitly appealed to their manhood and love of liberty. But the cause of the Civil War was not really liberty, it was slavery. And it bothers me so greatly when even Christian pastors justify and defend the Confederacy. This puts a blot on Christianity. Now, after the Civil War, those who dragged our country into that bloody carnage immediately began to change their tune as to why they did so. But one must read what these Confederate leaders said before the war and in the early years of it and through the war before they thought it was lost. If you want to find out the cause of the conflict, I say by their own words. I'm going to let the Confederate leaders, just a few of them, and use a few of their comments, speak on this issue. Then the neo-Confederates can argue with their own heroes as to the cause of the war. But the issue is settled for those who are honest. Now, where should we start? As I say, I have documents here. I want to page through these. Well, here, Senator John C. Calhoun of South Carolina. Now, this man is a hero to the neo-Confederates. He was the champion of the South slaveholders. If I'm not mistaken, he did die before the Civil War, but he defended slavery. And we have before us his last speech in the Senate. It was read March 4th, 1850. So we're way back in 1850 now, and he's been defending slavery. This is not something that there isn't a record. And so this speech, part of a denunciation of the Compromise of 1850, is what we're reading. I'm just going to grab some excerpts, but not out of context. I have senators believe from the first that the agitation of the subject of slavery would, if not prevented by some timely and effective measure, end in disunion. Well, there you have it. There's John C. Calhoun, senator from South Carolina, a great champion of the neo-Confederates. He's saying that way back in 1850, it's the agitation, the subject of slavery. That's what's going to cause disunion. Here again, what is it that has endangered the Union? To this question, there can be but one answer, that the immediate cause is the most universal discontent which pervades all the states composing the southern section of the Union. This widely extended discontent is not of recent origin. It commenced with the agitation that is from the South, people in the North, of the slavery issue, and has been increasing ever since. In other words, there was a chorus of voices raised in the North for an abolition of slavery. And there were senators and there were representatives that wanted it abolished. There were churches, and there were Christians. Yes, there were non-Christians. Of course there were. And yeah, there were Unitarians, but don't buy into this. There were no Christians in the North. Oh, it was all Unitarians and atheists, and the great South was all Christians. No, that was not the case. That was not the case. And it was a warped sort of Christianity in the South that defended slavery and what was going on. Do we have anything else we should read here? Skipping ahead, there's a question of vital importance to the southern section, in reference to which the views and feelings of the two sections are as opposite and hostile as they can possibly be. I refer to the relation between the two races in the southern section, which constitutes a vital portion of her social organization. Every portion of the North entertains views and feelings more or less hostile to it. Yes, and they would tell us nobody in the North was really against slavery except, you know, the firebrand abolitionists. And, of course, some of them did go too far. But let's go on. We're just going to just jump through history here, but all before the Civil War. What was the cause of the Civil War? Why don't we let Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, tell us what was the cause of the Civil War? He owned 100 slaves, by the way, as we talk about the slave power. And I've got to find him here. We have several different, here we are. Before I read that, maybe we should read something he wrote after the Civil War. He wrote, "The reader of many of the treatises which have been put forth as historical, if dependent upon such alone for information, might naturally enough be led to the conclusion that the controversies which arose between the states and the war in which they culminated were caused by efforts on one side to extend and perpetuate human slavery and on the other to resist and establish human liberty." But he goes on to try to rewrite that and say, well, that was not necessarily the case. He says, of course, the diversity of institutions contributed in some minor degree to the conflict of interests. The diversity of institutions. They spoke of slavery as an institution of the South. So he's talking about slavery there. Oh, it's just a minor degree. It contributed, but just minor. Now, that was after the war. He actually wrote that in The Rise and Fall of the Confederate Government, published 1881. Well, why don't we go to his message to the Confederate Congress, April 29th, 1861, the very start of the Confederacy. We'll just read a few excerpts here. "As soon as the northern states that prohibited African slavery within their limits had reached a number sufficient to give their representation a controlling voice in the Congress, a persistent and organized system of hostile measures against the rights of the owners of slaves in the southern states was inaugurated and gradually extended. A continuous series of measures was devised and prosecuted for the purpose of rendering insecure the tenure of property in slaves. Remember now, this is April 29th, right at the start of the Confederacy, really. And of course, the war started also in that very year. And the title of his address here to the Confederate Congress, by the way, is The Indispensable Slaves. Let me read just a few more excerpts. Finally, just jumping ahead, he talks about all this agitation from the North and denunciation of slavery and how they were trying to, it says here, for the purpose of impairing the security of property in slaves. He says, finally, a great party, talking about the Republican Party, was organized for the purpose of obtaining the administration of the government. In other words, secure the presidency and a majority in the Congress, with the avowed object of using its power for the total exclusion of the slave states from all participation, the benefits of the public domain acquired by all the states in common, whether by conquest or purchase, of surrounding them entirely by states in which slavery should be prohibited, of thus rendering the property in slaves so insecure as to be comparatively worthless, and thereby annihilating, in effect, property worth thousands of millions of dollars. This party, thus organized, succeeded in the month of November last in the election of its candidate for the presidency of the United States. Of course, that'd be Abraham Lincoln. So he saw Abraham Lincoln as very anti-slavery, no matter what the neo-Confederates say. And as you read this, you realize that they saw as this, if this is what it comprehended to them, the abolition of slavery. It's absolutely taking away what's near to them, what's dear to them, what is essential to their economy, this property in slaves. Isn't that chilling to talk of human beings as just mere property? And so they acted as if you take away our slaves, you've taken away everything. You've just excluded us from the whole process with regard to political process in our land. One more quote. This is from Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, right at the start of it. With interests of such overwhelming magnitude imperiled, that is, the losing of their slaves, these human beings, as their property, the people of the southern states were driven by the conduct of the North to the adoption of some course of action to avert the danger with which they were openly menaced. In other words, that's why they had to secede from the Union. That's why they had to attack the North, fire the first shots, because otherwise there was this interest of overwhelming magnitude imperiled, that is the right to keep, to own slaves. And so they were driven by the conduct of the North because, well, as is proper, the people in the North had very deep convictions about slavery, and as is proper in our republic, they were agitating in Congress and other places to put an end to slavery. Well, that wasn't acceptable. You couldn't have that opinion as far as the Confederates were concerned. Now, I want to read, I believe I'll just read one more series of quotes here. We will pick the vice president of the Confederacy, Alexander H. Stevens. We will quote from a speech in Savannah, March 21st, 1861. March 21st, 1861. I know you know your history. You know that this was the moment in time when it was all set to explode, so to speak, at the Confederate cornerstone. Alexander H. Stevens, he says this, and by the way, he had 34 slaves. So here we have the vice presidency of the newly formed Confederacy. He's giving this speech. The Confederate Constitution, it's been written now, you see, has put at rest forever all the agitating questions relating to our peculiar institution, African slavery as it exists among us, the proper status of the Negro in our form of civilization. In other words, he was saying, now we're out of the Union. This should put it to rest. We're going to have slavery forever. And good, we're done with it. And he says this, now listen well, if you're a neo-Confederate, this isn't me. This is prior to the Civil War. Alexander H. Stephens, the vice president of the newly formed Confederacy, speaking of the Confederate Constitution and the cause of the Civil War. This was slavery as it exists among us, he says. This was the immediate cause of the late rupture and present revolution. There it is, the immediate cause of the Civil War. Jefferson, he says, going on, Alexander Stephens, Jefferson in his forecast had anticipated this as the rock upon which the old Union would split. He was right. What was conjecture with him is now a realized fact. But whether he fully comprehended the great truth upon which that rock stood and stands may be doubted. The prevailing ideas, now listen well, entertained by him, Jefferson, of course, and most of the leading statesmen at the time of the formation of the old Constitution were that the enslavement of the African was in violation of the laws of nature. Speaking now of the laws of nature and of nature's God, as spoken of in our Declaration of Independence, that it was wrong in principle, socially, morally, and politically. Did you hear that? Wrong in principle, socially, morally, and politically. Slavery. Our founding fathers thought that, except for some from the South, which agitated and said, we will not enter into any kind of a constitution here unless you allow us to have slaves. It was an evil going on from Alexander Stephens, the Confederate cornerstone. The Confederate cornerstone, what is it? It's slavery. That's what he's explaining here. It was an evil they knew not well how to deal with. But the general opinion of the men of that day was that somehow or other, in the order of providence, the institution would be evanescent and pass away. It would be, in other words, it would be as something that eventually dissipates and passes away. Those ideas, I'm reading a couple of excerpts here. Those ideas, however, were fundamentally wrong. They rested upon the assumption of the equality of the races. This was an error. It was a sandy foundation, and the idea of a government built upon it, when the storm came and the wind blew, it fell. Now go on here. The Confederate cornerstone, Alexander H. Stephens, vice president of the Confederacy and writing at the start of the Confederacy and the war. Our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite ideas, that is, with regard to all men being created equal. Its foundations are laid. Its cornerstone, now listen, its very cornerstone, he says, rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race is his natural and moral condition. Would you like me to read that again? Its cornerstone rests, the new Confederate government, upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man. And he doesn't stop there. He goes on, that slavery, subordination to the superior race is his natural and moral condition. And listen to this. Here, listen to this boast from Alexander Stephens, vice president of the Confederacy. This, our new government, is the first in the history of the world based upon this great physical, philosophical, and moral truth. Well, I think Darwin would have liked Alexander Stephens, wouldn't he? And the Confederate leaders, the slave power, but let's go on. It is the first government ever instituted upon principles in strict conformity to nature and the ordination of providence in furnishing the materials of human society. Many governments have been founded upon the principles of certain classes, but the classes thus enslaved were of the same race and in violation of the laws of nature. Our system commits no such violation of nature's laws. The Negro by nature or by the curse against Canaan is fitted for that condition which he occupies in our system. The architect and the construction of buildings lays the foundation with the proper material, the granite. Then comes the brick or the marble. The substratum of our society is made of the material fitted by nature for it. And by experience, we know that it is best, not only for the superior, but for the inferior race, that it should be so. It is indeed in conformity with the Creator. It is not for us to inquire into the wisdom of his ordinances or to question them. That was Alexander Stephens. He tells us why the war started, the Civil War. It was slavery, slavery, slavery. Slavery, the cornerstone, the Confederate cornerstone, he says. You know, and to hear this, to hear him say, oh, this is best for them, that's chilling. It's best for the black people to be slaves. They're inferior. You know, I remember, and I'm not making this an exact equivalence, but I remember reading that Hitler told those under him that it might seem, you know, to you cruel to eradicate the Jews, to liquidate them. But remember, not only is it best for the world in general, it's really best for them because they're a miserable race, and they keep breeding and they keep spreading, and they're a miserable race. Now, I'm not making an exact equivalence, but it's the same thing, isn't it? Here you have Alexander Stevens saying, oh, it's best for them. They don't know what's good for them. They need to be slaves. They're better off that way. And so that's just a few of many, many quotes we could read from Confederate leaders prior to the Civil War. They argue, quite frankly, against what the neo-Confederates are saying now. But let me just read from a couple of documents. I won't go on and on here. I know perhaps I could ramble on quite a while. This issue, I feel very strongly on it for many reasons, having done a great deal of research and reading all the different arguments over the decades and reading histories of the Civil War, the causes of it, reading diaries, reading all sorts of various accounts and everything. I do feel very strongly about this very issue. Now, I have in front of me Confederate States of America, Declaration of the Immediate Causes, which induce and justify the secession of South Carolina from the Federal Union. I'm not going to read all this. It's quite long. They go on with quite a bit of relating history and talking about the Declaration of Independence and so on and so forth, the Constitution, and supposedly making their argument, misusing those documents. But I want to go on. I'll just read some excerpts. All right, this is again from the Declaration of Immediate Causes, which induce and justify the secession of South Carolina from the Federal Union. It says plainly here, an increasing hostility on the parts of the non-slave-owning states to the institution of slavery. It says it straight out. We can skip through this. Speaking of the northern states, including Wisconsin, by the way, which is mentioned, these states have assumed the right of deciding upon the propriety of our domestic institutions and have denied the rights of property, that is, they were not returning runaway slaves, established in 15 of the states. They have denounced and recognized by the Constitution, they claim. They have denounced as sinful the institution of slavery. Now, remember, we're talking here, South Carolina, and they're saying this is why we had to separate, and this is why we had to start a war. They have denounced as sinful the institution of slavery. Now, let's go on. They have permitted open establishment among them of societies whose avowed object is to disturb the peace and elloin the property of the citizens of other states. They have encouraged and assisted thousands of our slaves to leave their homes, and those who remain have been incited by emissaries, books, and pictures to servile insurrection, again, or so they claimed. This is, again, the neo-Confederates say, oh, the South, or really the Confederacy, we shouldn't say the South so much, they were all for rights, the rights of American citizens, et cetera, et cetera. Here you have these people saying, one, they've denounced slavery as sinful. That's wrong. They shouldn't do that. And they've actually allowed societies that are against slavery to be established in the North. That's not right. And they've sent books, pictures, anti-slavery things, literature, into the South. They shouldn't have allowed that. No, they should have muzzled them. No freedom of speech. And it goes on and talks about this agitation increasing and so on and so forth. And then the election of President Lincoln and he is to be entrusted with the administration of the common government, Abraham Lincoln, because he has declared that government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free, and that the public mind must rest in the belief that slavery is on the course of ultimate extinction. And so why did the South start the war? Slavery, 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 slavery. Let me read another excerpt here. On the 4th day of March next, this party will take possession of the government. It has announced that the South shall be excluded from the common territory. No such thing. It just said you can't take slaves into certain territories. they wanted to have free states, that the judicial tribunal shall be made sectional, and that a war must be waged against slavery until it shall cease throughout the United States. And so the guarantees of the Constitution will then no longer exist. The equal rights of the states will be lost. And all, of course, they say over slavery. And that's what they claim. Here's the Constitution of the Confederate States, and I'm not going to go further than this. We're going to just quick look through this. The Constitution, it's actually very much modeled after our U.S. Constitution. The Constitution of the Confederate States, it was approved March 11th, 1861. Let me just quickly page through and get to some issues on slavery. You know, our U.S. Constitution never mentions slavery, never specifically mentions slavery. Now, slaves are counted as, what was it, 3/5 persons for the purpose of a delegation or the number of delegates or I should say congressmen to the U.S. House. They wanted to count them for that. And, of course, that was a compromise. But other than that, slavery is not mentioned. But what do we have here? It's directly mentioned over and over. Now, first, I just want to read one thing to you. This is from, it's nothing to do with slavery. But, you know, you always hear the neo-Confederates say, Abraham Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Well, during rebellion, the Constitution actually specifically allowed that. Now, I don't think it's a good thing, but it's there. But what's this that I find in the Confederate Constitution? The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. And so they echo the U.S. Constitution there as well, don't they? I don't have the Constitution in front of me. I don't remember the exact wording of that part of it, but it's very close, if not the same. So much for that. Again, I'm not real wild about that one, but it's there. And it's kind of a act of hypocrisy to blame Lincoln because he did what they did in the South or in the Confederacy. Okay, here we go. Section 2, Article 1. The citizens of each state, that's the Confederate state, shall be entitled to all the privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states and shall have the right of transit and sojourn in any state of this Confederacy with their slaves and other property, and the right of property in said slaves shall not be thereby impaired. So all the states of the Confederacy were charged under law that they had to uphold slavery, the right of property in slaves. Here's going on Section 2, Article 3. No slave or other person held to service or labor in any state or territory of the Confederate States under the laws thereof, escaping or lawfully carried into another, shall in consequence of any law or regulation therein be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such slave belongs or to whom such service or labor may be due. In other words, again, you could not abolish slavery in the Confederate States no matter what. It's right in the Constitution, directly, specifically. Under the U.S. Constitution, the states could abolish it, but under the Confederate Constitution, no state could. Going down here to Section 3, Article 3, the Confederate states may acquire new territory, and Congress shall have power to legislate and provide governments for the inhabitants of all territory belonging to the Confederate states, lying within the limits of the several states, and may permit them at such times and in such manner as it may by law provide to form states to be admitted into the Confederacy. In all such territory, the institution of Negro slavery, as it now exists in the Confederate states, shall be recognized and protected by Congress and by the territorial government, and the inhabitants of the several Confederate states and territories shall have the right to take to such territory any slaves lawfully held by them in any of the states or territories of the Confederate States. And so everything connected to the Confederacy had to be slave territory. We're under the U.S. Constitution, at least prior to the Civil War even, and right from the start, the citizens of the United States of America could say, no, we're not going to take slaves into new states or new territories. It's bad enough where it is. We want to see it on the road to extinction. And so there were great struggles over that. But under the U.S., or I should say the Confederate Constitution, the Confederate cornerstone, slavery, was written into law over and over and over again, and there were no limits on it whatsoever, quite the contrary. But I need to wrap it up. That's just a very small sample of irrefutable proof concerning the cause of that tragic Civil War, which almost destroyed a generation of American men and plunged a generation of mothers and fathers and wives and children into mourning and sorrow. The cause of the war is the first issue we need to be concerned with. That's the first thing before you go any further in discussing the Confederacy. What was the cause of the war they started? It was slavery. And if the neo-Confederates want to try to divert attention from that and point to such things as, look, I've heard this many times, look at Sherman's march through Georgia, the brutal North. Look at Sherman's march through Georgia. Well, we can answer such diversionary tactics easily. With regard to Sherman's march, is it better to destroy the war-making ability of an opponent in war in order to end the war and save lives? Or is it better not to do so and allow the war to drag on and destroy more human lives? And by the way, what did Lee's men do when they invaded the North? We're not going to go on and on and on. As I said earlier, it is a blot on Christianity that there are even pastors who, knowingly or not, rewrite history in order to exalt the slave power's rebellion as being equivalent to America's war of independence, which it most surely was not.